更可以带。
Living during World War II, were you still in Rwanda City? Or?
No, I was living in World War II with Freer.
In Freer?
Yeah, and when I finished school there, I went over to Carthage. And they had taken all the trained nurses and stuff. And Ms. Bowen got me right back to the spine hospital. They built it with me.
Mm-hmm.
And I worked like a flunky, what I called it, but they called us aides. We didn't have any training for that field. We come right out of high school, but the sisters that run the high school stayed right by you and showed you how to do everything. Mm-hmm. I didn't know what to do. And our job was to more or less empty the tea pans and the potty pans and help them get their baths and, see if they had water and things like that. And if they got into trouble, then kind of got real sick something out of it. Hurry up and get the nurse.
Did you have any relatives or friends that were in the armed forces during World War II?
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. All my brothers were in the Navy, and my husband was in the Army. Yeah. Nearly all my family except my daddy was in the Navy. Back then, everybody we knew was in service. The women were left behind, but most of them are the any age, that's upgrown, went to work in other places in the civil service, working in plants and stuff, or working on the bases. Just the young girls, like us, just come out of high school while we went to work, trying to get more good days. Which we didn't know they would squat about it, but the sisters stayed right there with us, and there was one nearly on every floor that was showing those girls how and what to do. And honey, they were smart as doctors. But they knew their business. We didn't know ours. But we were learning. But then, later, when they began to get these nurses do stuff, and then everybody go and get licensed.
Did you get licensed?
No, I went to marry my husband and went where he was at. I went to work in a drugstore there. And I wasn't making very much money, and I certainly didn't make very much money working there. Fine, I got $35 a week and got paid every 2 weeks, $70. So I worked in the evening honking cars. Boy, you can make good money then. They let those sailors off in three bunches come in from the bases. And beer was rationed. And if they didn't have us, he said, well, we're out of beer. Or you don't have your share. We got to save some for other people. And that deal was my good bit. Because they knew if they kept us good, we kept that beer coming. And if they didn't, we'd start making excuses. Because we wanted some of them had parked in there typically. And you could make $100 a tip, easy tip. And then that was good money because you'd work all week for $30, $40, easy. And those sailors were tips, so we'd keep giving them good. I made good money. My husband would come home from service, and he worked like a dog all week long. Got his main home pay was $125 a week. And I could make that in one night on the weekend. Friday, Saturday, or Sunday night, I could be there. And that used to make a man. He said, don't take no brains to a car. He said, you got to be smart to be a welder. And I said, well, you chose your job. And I said, I thought I chose mine trying to help people, but they don't pay me. And they didn't. And they didn't think you. You take. I had to catch the bus out there to go to work and have to buy a little something for the day for lunch. And you got there, you didn't have nothing left in the week. You better be real careful, you wouldn't have your bus there. And my sister found out she went to work there. And she'd stick her nickels in the juice box because she didn't like music. And then she wouldn't have money to keep her bus to work, and I'd have to run the money. So she went to work.
Did your parents remain living in Miranda City?
No, they were moving over here at that time. Yeah.
Was your, did your dad continue being a...
He worked as a driller until he started getting old, and then he started taking care of leases, being what they call pumpers. It comes to all of them. Yeah, he stayed there. He got old, and then another passed away. He was there, oh, I said, he's there years, 40 years. And then he got too old to talk to the cow after the sister and stayed in my sister's pockets. He was 96 when he passed away. But my family lived all over Scotland. My brother, sister. I had three brothers and four sisters. And then, in those days, everybody had big families. They had these big birthday programs. Everybody had big families. And that one time made it hard on me because it taught me to be the big family. And my mother was an artist with her son. And she sold all that stuff. And if she hadn't, we'd probably have been looking for big business. But she did so. And that's something that really did. I've never had nothing in this
period. During the war, when it was taking place, did you have like restrictions on food supply?
Oh yeah, everything was right. Gasoline and everything. I had labor in on the big ranch a little further. And she always went to Cotulla to buy her groceries. And I was staying out the ranch with her for the weekend. And she said, come right into Cotulla with me to get groceries, because we're going to have all those hunters coming out here to hunt. And she says, but you know how they are, they're always hungry. And I rode into Cotulla with her. And she bought, I guess, about $400 worth of groceries. And all they'd sell her was 1 pound of coffee. Well, you can't send no flock of hunters out without their coffee. And she's up there trying to talk that guy into letting her have coffee. Some extra coffee. And he said, no. He said, we can't do that. Because they check on us. This is ration product, and we've got to have the stamps to turn in. Well, she sends me back there. I said, tell her something. I had a big coat, a big coat, and she signaled it go around there. And it had a zip-in lining in it for extra warmth. When it was real cold, I had that zip-in lining in it. And I was cooking pounds of coffee in, and it slid down at the bottom of my coat and my foot came in like that. I got about 10 pounds of coffee, which I shouldn't have. But I did because she couldn't run her hunter. You know what I mean with that? And I walked out and I got to the car. I had to ease out of my coat and lay in the back seat. Because I couldn't sit down, I had the coffee in the bottom. And I sprayed that puncture up. Foil and it was wrapped in. It wasn't in cans, it was just foil wrappers. Yeah. I laid my coat in the back seat when we got in, but it was a real cold day. And it was just rare that I had on that coat. And when I got home, I went by to see my mother. And then I was going to have to go because I had to work, you know. And I stopped to mother and I told her what we give back that coffee, and she said, oh, she said, you're going to get in trouble. I'm ashamed of you for doing that. And I said, well, Hattie needed coffee for the hunters, and I said, she sent me back there to get it, and I got it. But it's a wonder they ain't up there still. But I was down in the street. And I wasn't really kidding, but they were where I was, you know, just wrong guy had a good time. That's all I thought about. And that's what most young people think about a good time. They don't take off until they get a little older. Once they get their own household and have to think of more serious things, then they begin to get more serious money. But when they're young and in school age, you just coming out of school, all I think about having good old time. Every generation's that way. I don't know, since the beginning of time, we haven't changed much. No matter what the elders tell you, you don't listen to them. You after than whatever you think's going to be a good time. And most kids are that way. And if you grow older, you sort of forget that. Right? But you have some of these young. We get aggravated with our young people because they're not serious minded. But I don't think any generation is real young, are But all of this war part of South Texas was very few families living in this area. But too many people. When the people began to come was when they started drilling and making oil. Oil is what opened the South Texas. And the people coming on settling more. Up until then, there were just a few ranchers and the few little families that helped them on their ranch, which most of them didn't hire that much help. They'd make their kids get out and help them around the nut day and stuff. And they had a little help, but not much, because they had to feed them if they had help. And food was expensive and hard to come by. I mean, they didn't get much help to help them because they just couldn't afford it. I mean, paid them to do something, fed them while that was a big buy down and they really built them up. So usually they made their kids help, which was good for them.
How did your mom deal with having all of her kids up to war? How did she deal with that?
She just had to accept it. She worried about them, but what can you do? If the government says, you got to go, you got to go. So they all accepted it. The people were more patriotic in World War II than they are now. They don't speak of it. They don't even think in the same way, and they don't think it's patriotically about their country as they did. In World War II, everybody wanted to go. All the men wanted to go help get things under control.
I have one final question. There's been talk about building a memorial for the World War II veterans. What is your opinion on that?
I think they're a little slow on it, don't you? My husband was decorated real well in World War II. We got 4 Bronze Stars. Good Conduct, Medal of Honor, and we got a sharpshooter, an M1, an M16 rifle. We got a marksmanship for the machine gun, marksmanship with the bazooka. That was your first, like, launching a grenade deal to destroy tanks. That was what they first used on tanks in World War II. Because they had invented the rockets and stuff yet. He was a very good marksman, firearms. And he could stand and listen to hear machine gun firing down in the lower part. He could tell you if it was Italian made, German made, Russian made, or if it was United States made. I said, how did you learn that? He said, well, when your life depends on it, you learn it real quick. He said that you could tell where your men were by listening to the fire. He said, you know the American troops up here because that's your firearms fire. You can tell if it was German firearms going. He said, you learned your ear talking. He said, if you didn't, you'd be dead for a while. So it makes sense if they learned it. You could pitch a Coke can out in the river. He'd say, which way do you want it to go? Over this way, or bring it back this way, or turn it in over in downstream, or turn it in over in going upstream. He could hit that can, make it just flip any direction you want it. He was sharp. You could put a dime in, I couldn't even see the dime across the road in front of his mother's house. He said, me old dad put a dime up the tree. And he could blow the center out of every dime I put up there. I couldn't even see it, let alone hit it. fired, and he was like sent around every time. And his mother told me that even when he was a kid, he was an excellent shot because, like saying depression, meat was hard to come by. She said, not for them, because he got that. So he'd take up. We came home and went up there and shake the squirrel's nest. Well, a squirrel, when you shake his nest, and jump up and look out of it like that. He said, he'd shoot their eye out every time. He said, never messed up me. But he'd blow their little head off every time they peeked out, seeing what was up. And same way with fish. She said he could always bring his fish. And he fished different.